Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 55 of the Uncovered Podcast. I'm your host, Behram Kazi. You can find me at DefMango on Twitter. And with me, of course, as always, is Jared Kimber. You can find him literally.
Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code play100. That's code play100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
I'll come to the comments later, but Jared, Pakistan have defecated on the birthday cake. Does that sound about right?
Is that what Baba said in the press conference? I missed it. That would have been a hell of a one. I mean, why are you asking me? I should be asking you. How do you feel? Do you need an emotional support animal at this point? Are you surprised? Are you angry? Are you horny? I don't know. How are you feeling?
I am disappointed, of course. Not as surprised, though, because it really wasn't a contest. I think Afghanistan chased it down quite comfortably, and it was a really calculated chase. And I would say that, look, you dropped David Warner on 10 runs versus Australia. Then you went on to drop two more. We both mentioned how Pakistan will probably have to outbat Australia in that game, and they really minimized their chances of doing that. Then come Afghanistan, I think they batted really well. I think 282 was enough on this surface. But it was really, really poor bowling in both games. They served up pie after pie after pie. Too much width on offer or they'd be straying down leg. And then also, you know, the captaincy I thought was really, really off today. I think this is the worst I've ever seen Babar Azam captain. The bowling changes were awful. The field placements were awful. Athers in the comm box was pleading for a long on and long off to come up, right? It was really bad. And when the ball was reversing, Babar continued with the spinners when he didn't have much runs to defend. He did not bring back his pacers, which was, you know, quite bad. And the fielding, forget the drop catches today, the ground fielding was really, really bad, right? I don't know which one of these factors is the biggest contributing factor, but all three of them combined have really resulted in Pakistan winning only 2 out of 5 and losing to Afghanistan for the first time ever in ODI cricket.
I think Iftikhar's been playing really well.
Mm-hmm. Iftimania, I think, was the one shining light in all of this. Even versus Australia, I thought he was doing well. Kind of got unlucky over there.
He's gone well all tournament. He hasn't been hit for any runs. I think Rizwan, Iftikhar and Shafiq are the only players who are playing above par. But I'm not sure anyone else is even playing par.
Well, I mean, Shaheen did take 5 versus Australia. He deserved 6. He should have had Warner's wicket. But today, again, I mean,
he took 5. Don't get me wrong. I don't like dissing death wickets.
Yeah.
The innings was kind of over at that point, and it was already too much for them to chase. That's not his fault, right? Because, you know, it's only one part of his game. But Shaheen Afridi taking 5 wickets, there's 5 wickets up front and there's 5 wickets at the end. There's about 1,000,000% difference between those two. But I get your point.
I
just think there. I mean, I don't know. The Bubba stuff, I get. I don't think that's why Pakistan is 2-3, right?
Is it strike bowling? Because that's what makes Pakistan a special team, and their bowling has looked really, really flat. And the spinners in particular, they might be the worst spin bowling attack in the tournament at this point.
We were asked that on the previous show. And it's a very fair question. I think you probably still take Pakistan spin over Netherlands, right? But at the moment, the Netherlands...
Well, Aryan Dutt has looked better than any of the spinners in both teams.
Roloff is bowling better than anyone in Pakistan, right? Colin Ackerman could come in now and he'd be Iftikhar, right? So I think that's fair. Look, they're not taking any wickets. But we knew it was a weaker bowling attack to begin with, right? When the ball hasn't swung early on and Hasan Ali hasn't got wickets with the wobble ball and Harris Ruff hasn't got any wickets later on, where do they turn? They don't have anyone else who can take wickets in this side, right? You know, they brought the leggy in for 2 games, Usama Mir, and he's basically me, right? He's going at 8 and over at this point, yeah? Slightly taller than me. Bit of action.
Yeah.
But he's bowling like a, you know, he's bowling like another, every leg spinner they bring in bowls like a part-timer, despite the fact they're all supposed to be functionally, first choice bowlers.
I mean, to be honest, Jared, I think you would have got a hand at least on that David Warner catch, right? You might have dropped it, probably not, but you would have laid a hand on it.
You know, I played in a game of cricket earlier this year, and the wicketkeeper came up to me and said at one stage, you realize you're diving too early every time. Mm. And it was because in my mind, because I'm not used, I played a lot of cricket since I broke my arm. So in my mind, I was like, I have to throw myself around the field and get used to it. But I was diving too early every time. I was reminded of that watching Imam Al-Haq field at times today. I'm just like...
Rambo made a comment, right? He was like, he jumps over the ball every single time. And I thought that was hilarious.
It's a bit like England and maybe even like Australia after the first couple of games. Well, you look at it and it's like, okay, everyone's moaning about Butler and Bubba. Douglas Jardine, MS Dhoni, Arjuna Ranatunga. You can pick your fantasy captain, Stephen Fleming, Jeremy Coney, Martin Crowe. He's gone all New Zealand now. You can pick Eric Armstrong. You can pick whichever fantasy captain you want. If your bowlers keep bowling short outside of stump, if your spinner is absolutely terrible, and if your batting lineup isn't quite making up for all those other things, so batting above and beyond what you need them to do, what's the captain supposed to do? That's not dissing Athers. There are times when he could have brought the field in and everything else. If he brought mid on and mid off up, though, they would have just dropped the catch and thrown the ball back over the head, right? Like, you have to be realistic with these things. England and Pakistan are not losing because of captaincy. Who the hell thinks that? It's because they're playing shit. They should stop playing shit.
Yeah, well, you wouldn't want to swap places with Morne Morkel right about now, right? Because that was a perfectly fine-looking bowling attack, and now a lot of fingers will be pointed towards him, and probably wrongly, because he's barely been in the job, right?
Well, Hassan Ali,
in what, 2 weeks?
They probably took a chance on Hassan Ali. If you look at his figures, like, I don't think he should have been picked. I'd love to talk to the selection committee about this, but I don't think he should have been picked. I think he was picked a little bit because they trusted him, because he's Hassan Ali, which is fine. I get it. Shaheen is clearly not up to scratch. And Harris Ruff is just maybe, 5% off his best? But the thing with him is 5% off his best when you're not that accurate and you don't do a lot with the ball. If the ball's not reversing as much, I know there's little bits at times, but if it's not reversing as much, he's not bowling a slow ball. I don't know where he goes as a bowler. I don't think he was horrendous today, but I think that good batters waited for bad balls and they hit them. And he gave them enough.
Yeah, well, I mean, Australia took him for, 47 runs in his first three overs. He came back at the death. He's a really, really good death bowler. You know, he took 3 for 24 in the last four overs. But look, if we look at Pakistan's batting, of course, the bowling has been abject. There are no two ways about it. They've been wayward, erratic, all of that stuff. But if you look at their batters, Babar was having a stinker, but he's got a couple of 50s now, hasn't been able to cash in proper. Imam reached, 70-odd versus Australia, couldn't cash in. Abdullah Shafiq, after that ton versus Sri Lanka, has continued to look good. He's crossed 50 a couple of times. But again, he hasn't gotten that big score. And Pakistan now are in a position where even to stand a chance of qualification for the semi-finals, they will have to win 4 out of their remaining 4 games, which are against really, really good teams, barring, you'd say, maybe Bangladesh. So Pakistan, I would favor them in that competition.
Do they have less
points? So when it comes down...
Are they in a worse position than they were in 92?
They're probably in a similar position, because in 92 also they needed to win everything and also depend on other games.
There was rain in the England game. So it's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I think Pakistan right now, if they win those 4 games, which I don't think they can, they will probably... You know, it'll put them in good stead. But yeah, I mean, South Africa's playing great. New Zealand's playing great. And I just feel like it'll come down to the batters scoring big. All of these guys who are getting starts in 50s, they just need to go on and get to 3 figures. And the only way Pakistan remain alive in this World Cup is via their batting. And that is looking woeful, isn't it?
Well, their batting is weaker now than it was at the start of the tournament because they've had to drop a batter because their bowls are so bad. So we're saying their batters have to play even better, but we're also saying you're going to have to do it with one less batting option in the side. So how are they supposed to be able to do any of this, right? I'm just going to put a hypothetical to you and you can finish Pakistan so you don't break into tears here. But if I said to you coming in that Pakistan would break the record for the highest chase in World Cups and after 5 games would be above England on the points table, you would have been pretty happy, though.
Yeah, I would be ecstatic.
And you're not happy, I mean, Bairam. You're not happy
absolutely.
At all.
I mean, I literally said that they defecated on the birthday cake. And that's funny because they're always cutting cake, right? That's the Pakistan thing. That's the Pakistan way. Screw scoring rates and everything. But anyway, let's talk about Afghanistan, right? Mm-hmm. They've slayed yet another giant in this World Cup after England. And this time, their top four batters, all of them stood up. They all got runs, all pretty much crossed 50, other than Hashmatullah, I think, who was unbeaten on 48. Plus Noor Ahmed, World Cup debut. They go in with four spinners on a Chennai surface. Love that. Noor takes 3 for 49 and was one of their best players. And Afghanistan dominated this game. They were dominating huge chunks of this game, and Pakistan was only up for like brief periods. And even though their catching let them down versus New Zealand, which I thought had they caught three of those five catches, they would have fared better. I do feel like this might just be a watershed moment for Afghanistan cricket, because you need those wins to look back to, which inspires future generations.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying. I would go a completely different direction. And what I would say is that essentially what we have with... what we have with Afghanistan is that their batting showed maturity in a way that we haven't really seen in a World Cup against a good team. And that their top four functioned the way that a top four should function. I mean, it functioned better, of course, because they played so well. But essentially, one guy went quite hard, put pressure on the bowlers. The other three batted just smartly in the situation as was needed at any one stage. So the inspiring thing is, I don't think Pakistan, they're terrible. I don't think Afghanistan need inspiring, right? I think what they need is a top four that can make runs, right? Mm. And I think what we saw today was hopefully the system that will go forward of, we have multiple batters. These guys can make big runs. They can put pressure on good bowling attacks. And we can also chase. It was the 17th highest chase in World Cup history. And 282 doesn't seem like a big chase. But if you're Afghanistan...
It was also their highest chase in an ODI ever. And Pakistan had never conceded more runs in the second innings. Had never lost a game in the World Cup in which they had scored at least 275. So those are big things.
Exactly. And look, we know there are caveats there and all sorts of things of how Pakistan played and everything else. But when you come down to it, it was an absolutely fantastic performance. So for me, it's not about inspiring. What they did is how you win games in World Cups against good teams consistently. It's not a one-off. Yeah. If you look back to the England game, there's an element of fluke in that. Not fluke as in they didn't deserve the win, but as in how do you replicate that? Gabaz goes nuts and then one batter stays with the tail and the tail go nuts. Put that up on the board, right? Like, you can't do that. Put this one up on the board. We're going to pick an extra spinner on a spin-friendly wicket. We're going to come up with good plans for each of the bowlers, for each of the Pakistani batters. We're going to try and keep them to par or slightly below par. And then our attacking batter is going to go out and put some pressure on them. And everyone else is going to bat to their strength as deep as possible. You can plan that. That is a good way of winning cricket games. And that's the difference between the England one, which is more like an associate win, and this one, which is more like a top level, one day we can make the semifinals win. Not now, but...
And it was... One day. And it was pending, you know. They had come close versus Pakistan so many times. So I think Afghanistan definitely deserved this. And congratulations to any Afghan people who are watching this. I'll just take a quick look at the comments before we can go on our first break. Prateek Jha says, "Hi, Behram. I am not the guy who calls you that guy." Well, I love that guy as well. And Tuhin Subranath says, "Just here to see Behram cry." Well, hate to disappoint you, Tuhin. I'm doing completely fine. And then Triple Szechuan Fried Rice says, "Hello, Behram and J-Rod, sending love to both. Love right back at you." And yeah, this is a good time to take a break. We'll be back with more cricketing stuff. You're watching Uncovered with Behram and Jared, and we'll catch you after this break.
Looking for a cricket game that makes you the captain, coach, selector, and, I don't know, director of cricket? You can do all of that on Wicket Cricket Manager. It lets you control every aspect of the game. Show off your cricket expertise as you navigate through thrilling matches. Buy, sell, and train players to build a team worthy of victory for Wicket Cricket Manager.
Welcome back to Uncovered, you with Behram and Jared. And yeah, let's move on to Australia. Last time we spoke, they had lost 2 games out of 2, and now they have recovered well. They've won both their games versus Sri Lanka and then Pakistan. David Warner and Mitch Marsh scored 163 and 121 respectively. Warner has now scored 4 consecutive ODI tons versus Pakistan, which I think is definitely worth mentioning. And Mitch Marsh also got a 50 versus Sri Lanka. So the top order, or at least the opening pair, is firing. But the rest of the batters aren't.
No.
Versus Pakistan, their next best score was 25, and those were extras. Not even a single batter, right? And Travis Head is recovering. So let's suppose, hypothetical situation, Travis Head is fit for the next game. Who sits out? Is it Steve Smith?
No, it's probably Marnus, isn't it? Well, doesn't Marnus have a negative strike rate at the moment? I mean, I haven't looked, but he would have to have the lowest strike rate in the World Cup, wouldn't he? I'd be shocked if anyone else was lower. So I think it's probably him. I mean, Inglis is going to keep. They're probably not going to go back to Carey now after making quite a, savage move there. And Marnus just hasn't looked like making any runs. The thing is, I think I might have said this on another video, or I was talking to a friend about this, but essentially, Marnus could still make runs, like in this tournament, and could still make a really important innings. But the question would have to be is Marnus in any way going to have the ability to have an impact on this tournament? And it'd be hard to say he's going to at the moment, right?
Yeah, no. And
strike rate 64, positive. By the way. 64. So the only specialist batters, there's a couple, all the other specialist batters with a lower strike rate than him just have scored no runs, right? So who have we got here? Ridoy, O'Dowd, and Vikram. So the two openers from the Netherlands and Ridoy, but none of them have made any runs. So, sometimes you have no strike rate when you haven't made any runs just because, you're getting started. He's made, 121 runs? It's been bad.
Something like that. Yeah. And I mean, Travis Head has been in impeccable form all year. He had a good Ashes series as well. And I think that Australia wouldn't blink twice before, shooing him into this lineup.
But another twice. Big did positive. You, did you hear the Matthew Hayden line where he said, Pakistan are blinking all over the place here? He says, sometimes he says something that's so bizarre. And I just think that should be on a t-shirt. They're blinking all over the place here.
I actually love Haydos and Watto in the comm box. I think they bring great energy, even if they have a tendency, Haydos in particular, to say something bizarre. But another big positive for Australia is that Adam Zampa has taken back-to-back four-wicket hauls, first versus Sri Lanka and then versus Pakistan. And once again, he's looking like that same bowler who, between both World Cups, took 77 wickets at 22 apiece, which is the most for any pacer or spinner, by the way. Would you say this is perhaps the biggest positive for Australia moving forward in this tournament, which is going to be played in India and you need your spinner to fire?
I mean, yes, I suppose. Perhaps the biggest positive is still Maxwell, though, right? Like, if your fifth bowler, and I know he didn't get through all of his overs against Pakistan, it was maybe the first time that he got met a little bit, but he's been outstanding so far in this tournament. And you kind of figured that Zampa wouldn't struggle forever, maybe is the best way of putting it. I think those are big positives. There's plenty of issues. I mean, this is why I do the power lists and everything, right? Because you can see just how much who you play really affects it. So someone was asking me earlier about, why have Afghanistan done better than Bangladesh? And I was like, well, actually, Bangladesh beat Afghanistan, right? But then since then they played England, New Zealand, and India, and they haven't played Netherlands or Sri Lanka. Oh, Pakistan, maybe at the moment, might be another one there, right? So when you play teams, really, really matters. And, Australia have played Sri Lanka, who are already pretty much emotionally out of the tournament at that stage. And they were still using their young bowlers. They looked a lot better when they used their older bowlers in the following game. And they played Pakistan, who we now know are terrible. So, some of it is that there are better signs for Australia, but certainly, we're not I don't think anyone would get that excited about them at the moment compared to the top three teams who look a lot more smooth.
Yeah, I think so as well. I think versus Pakistan in particular, maybe it was Pakistan playing bad that was more of an issue rather than Australia playing exceptional cricket. And I take nothing away from Warner, Marsh and Adam Zampa. I mean, Marsh was playing golf at one point. But you mentioned Sri Lanka, and we actually didn't talk about them in the last Uncovered episode. So I wanted to spend a little bit of time on them. Look, they finally won a game versus the Netherlands, and their batters have performed well in patches. Nisanka, the opener, he's gotten 50 quite regularly this tournament. Kusal Pereira got 78 versus Australia. They had a great opening partnership going. And the other Kusal also, Kusal Mendes, he's done fairly well as well. I mean, he got some big scores. And Sadira Samra Wickrama has, risen up, scored another unbeaten 91 versus the Netherlands. That was a match-winning effort. Dilshan Madhushankar is having a really good tournament. He's taken 7 wickets in the last 2 games. And Kasun Rajitha as well took 4 versus the Netherlands. Now, Sri Lanka have lost 4 out of 5 or 3 out of 4, something like that. It doesn't seem like they'll make the semifinals. But let's talk about 2027, if we have that World Cup, by the way. We never know.
Just a shout out for us. We said that this was going to happen beforehand. And if you look at the comments of those, everyone was like, what are you talking about? It's like, well, there's a reason I made that video and we made that podcast. It's because I told you flat out, this is going to happen. They're already starting to talk about this.
Yeah. And, you know, just the fact that, I mean, KSR also deserves a shout out, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Came up with it.
He's the reason I asked the question. So he was definitely on it. I think his stuff was more from the broadside broadcasters. I was more shocked at the ICC, but that's inside baseball. No one cares.
Yeah. Go watch that podcast if you guys are interested in whether or not ODIs will survive. But what I was wanting to ask you is that, do you see the Sri Lankan team, because they're all either in their early 20s or late 20s, do you see them being a threat in 2027 if 2027 happens?
I don't know if I have the bandwidth to think about it, the next tournament being that we may never finish this one and that it may not go ahead anyway. But yeah, look, I there's a T20 World Cup coming up. A lot of their younger players have gone in. I think Estelle put a tweet out once with the average age of the Sri Lankan team. You know, the core members of the Sri Lankan team is incredibly young. And a lot of these players are quite well experienced. You know, Partharana and Welalage are not, right? But a lot of those other players are very experienced and, you know, have played a lot of cricket and everything else. So I think from that side of things, what I would say is that it doesn't matter if it's even in a year's time or in 2 years' time or, you know, 2028, Olympics, if they make it. I think they'll be a better team going forward. There's something there. There's a lot of interesting players there that I like, lots of interesting pieces. Their batting seems to be maturing very quickly. I do think we maybe overrated their batting at the start of the tournament, being that we now know they were on probably the two best batting surfaces of all time. But even so, they still made the runs. And we still know that without their two of their five best bowlers, they're young. They're an interesting team. I think there's still some holes within their cricket a little bit going forward. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Hasaranga, Tikshana, Welalage, and then you've got Madashankar, Partharana, Chimiro, if he ever gets fit. There's other seamers as well. And then you've got this top order sort of, you know, finally Kusal Mendis is, you know, maturing, and Sadhvik Rama and all the... we're putting together a lot of names there of players who maybe aren't quite ready now, but you could see them and you're just like, well, there's something going on with these guys. How will they be in the next World Cup? How will they be even in Test cricket over the next couple of years? It seems a lot more exciting than the, you know, the omni-shambles that they were not that long ago.
Yeah, no, I think they definitely look a better team ever since, you know, the downfall post Sangha and Mahela. Just going to give some shout-outs to the people who are watching. Atul Lakshman is here. Ahmed Hussain Chishti from All Rounders Den is here. So shout-out to you. Shitij Kumar. And also, we've got Embers Assembling, who has a super chat, Jared. So you could bring that up.
You can start talking it and I will bring it up.
All right. So Embers Assembling says, how is cricket rivalry with Afghanistan seen in Pakistan? Well, you're talking to a Pakistani-Canadian who doesn't agree with 95% of Pakistan, right? My views would get me slaughtered over here. But anyway, actually, I'll take that back. That got kind of dark. But yeah, no, that definitely got dark. Look, Afghanistan and Pakistan have had geopolitical tensions. So a lot of people do care about this on either side of the border. I think Afghanistan cares about it more because
it's
Pakistan
always, that's little brother, big brother thing, isn't it?
It's always that sort of thing. Pakistan does not like to lose versus Afghanistan. And there's been some troubles with respect to fans in these games. There is a bit of bad blood.
Was there a game where the fans fought? I can't even remember where that was.
Yeah, that was 2019 Headingley. And I was in the ground. I didn't fight with anyone, though. I was having fun. I didn't experience any of that. But look, for a lot of people, it does mean a lot in Pakistan. And I'm sure in Afghanistan, this is their biggest day ever in cricket history. Yeah. But why shouldn't it be? You know,
I think this is their biggest win, isn't it? Like, as in emotionally, just because.
Yes.
I mean, for those who don't know the full story, a lot of these Afghanistani players, especially the older ones, trained in Pakistan. And they still train with Pakistan and everything. And, you know, the old wicketkeeper, the... he wanted to play for Pakistan. And a lot of them see, you know, I feel like they've been talked down about by Pakistan cricket. And we've seen that with Bangladesh as well. Pakistan has become like a mini England for a couple of different countries. And it is a big thing. And this is going to sound really random, but Ramiz Raja is a big part of this as well. He does talk very patronizingly about Bangladesh and about Afghanistan.
I've seen that.
Yeah. And I know it was always a problem in Bangladesh. I got messages from Afghanistanis suggesting a similar thing early in the game today. Afterwards, they actually came back going, oh, he's saying nice things. But there was a time when he was saying things. And it's really what Ramiz is doing is he's just angry at how Pakistan is going, and he's trying to be honest. But in being honest, it makes it look like he's talking down about the other teams.
Ramiz has this habit of always calling other teams which he doesn't feel are as strong as Pakistan as lesser teams. And I've had an issue with that. I don't think you should be doing that on commentary. But, you know, at least from my side, it's only happiness for Afghanistan. No animosity whatsoever. But yeah, things are complicated in the subcontinent, man.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Whoever lives in India, Pakistan, you guys have to realize this, that look at the comment section. Everyone is fighting all the time. People
not
swear
our comments.
At me on
in
the
our comments, they're great. Yeah. But in other people's comments.
Yeah. I mean, I try to keep things extremely professional and everything, but even I get, you know, hammered with all kinds of bullshit online. But anyway, I want to move on to the Netherlands. Of course, we've had so much cricket that we forgot that the Netherlands have defeated South Africa. And that is another huge upset, I'd say. And they've actually defeated them in consecutive World Cups, different formats. And I think that is huge. Scotty Edwards, 78 runs with the bat. He came out when the Netherlands were 82 for 5, took them to 245 odd in 43 overs. Took three catches behind the stumps, and his captaincy, you called it, by the way, I think has been the best on display in this World Cup. You know, close in fielders, great matchups. He has a lot of knowledge, has done his homework. And I love the guy because he comes and says that, hey, we're going to aim for the semi-final. So how impressed are you?
Yeah, I put up beforehand. And so Peter Boren commented on, I think it was the best case, worst case video that we did. And I put up that, you know, there's every possibility they don't win a game. And, you know, there were a lot of Dutch fans who just privately contacted me saying, yeah, we might not win a game. But there are a lot of others going, well, I see what you're saying, but I just think that this team has something about it. And to be honest, this is the difference between the Afghanistan win against Pakistan. And there's nothing replicable about what Netherlands did to beat South Africa. They got themselves in a massive hole and then they got themselves out of it beautifully. And then they put, and that pressure then put South Africa in the hole. And it was absolutely magnificent. But, you know, Logan van Beek can only score at a strike rate of 500, you know, once every couple of months. He can't do it every game, right?
He can dance after every game. He's got some moves.
He's
Jared.
A very good dancer, isn't he? Is he?
Yeah.
I don't know, top seven dancers in New Zealand. There's only seven people in New Zealand. But, you know, when he goes back to New Zealand, like it's in the Netherlands, I would assume there's more people who can dance. But anyway, that's a conversation for another
time. Yeah, I mean, he probably dances better than most sheep in New Zealand, I'd say. But yeah,
he plays county cricket as well, doesn't he? There's no county players dancing like that. But look, I think there's an element of, I'd love to see them play a game like Afghanistan just played, right? And we know they're really, really quite calm when they're in the field. And I think that's partly because Scott Edwards has been so on top of things and everything else. But I'd love to see them chase. So when they chase that total against Pakistan, you know, we're in our Discord chat and a lot of people were getting excited. And I was like, yeah, I've seen this team. They're not chasing this. Like, and I want to see that. I want to be proved wrong there. But they do so many things right, and they've been doing so many things right for a long time. And I love that, you know, coming into this, I don't think I had them as the 10th best team in one-day cricket. I probably had them as maybe 11th or 12th, right? And the fact that they have still done so well here, even in the losses, it just tells you how well they're going. But it's an absolute credit to everyone who works in Dutch cricket at the moment.
Yeah, and they've got Gray Nichols as a sponsor and one of the best jerseys in this World Cup as well. But the two Dutch all-rounders, like Bastaleda and Logan van Beek, they've been really, really good. When they're not scoring runs, they're taking wickets quite regularly. And Ahmed has actually pointed this out in the comments as well. The Netherlands in both these last two games, they've recovered really well. 82 for 5 versus South Africa and then 91 for 6 versus Sri Lanka. They went on to post 262 courtesy of 50s from van Beek and Engelbrecht. Love that. And also Aryan Dutt is spinning a web.
Yeah, no, of course. no, you're right. Also, Ahmed, they did that against West Indies to get here. A similar kind of thing. They can't keep doing that, right? But this is one thing where I would say how much this level of team has changed, which is even in 2018 when I worked in for Scotland, the other analysts would say things like, you only need to take 5 wickets. If you can take 5 wickets, then that's when you get the club cricketers coming out. You know, that's when you get the guys who are not quite at this level. We put a bit of pressure on them. Not that they, you know, those guys can't step up in certain situations, but that's what you need to do. You look at this Dutch team, right? There's batting very deep. I don't think we've ever seen a team of this level, you know, that sort of, let's say 10, 11, 12th best team in the world, bat as deep as they do. And so, yes, there's an element of fluke that they keep losing all the wickets at the top and then coming back. but they've done it three times. So there's an element of, well, they've got a longer batting lineup. I would say this is the third World Cup in a row where their top order has not done the job. Max O'Dowd basically batted on his own for two tournaments, and now he's having a shocker and no one's doing it. They have to get more runs out of the guys at the top, but the guys down the order completely doing their job.
Yeah, and I mean, Max O'Dowd is probably, you know, DJing for the team whenever they do win so that Logan Van Beek can dance. But anyway, we'll come back after a break and talk India so all Indian supporters can stick around for this next little phase. And you're watching Uncovered with Jared and Bayram. We'll be back after this break. Welcome back to episode 55 of the Uncovered podcast. You're with Bayram and Jared. And let's come to India, the only unbeaten team left in the World Cup who, since the last Uncovered podcast, has defeated both Bangladesh and New Zealand. New Zealand, they've defeated after 20 years in the World Cup, and New Zealand are their bogey team. So that's a big one for India. That'll feel really, really sweet. And well, Virat Kohli nearly scored back-to-back hundreds and in match-winning causes. So Kohli is back. The king is reigning once again. And even without Hardik Pandya, India looked completely fine. They're still the team to beat. And that is phenomenal.
Yeah, I think I compared them to 2003 Australia, right? Where Australia didn't have Gillespie and Warne. And you brought in Andy Bickle and Brad Hogg. And so you still have very, very good teams. You know, it's not maybe not quite the team that you wanted. And you know you can have a stronger team. England won the last World Cup without Jofra Archer. What Hardik allows them to do when fit and playing at the level he's playing at the moment, especially with his bowling, it's just, they can be so flexible with their lineup. He can be their fifth bowler. He can be their seventh bowler, right? They can really play with it in any direction. Now they're having to make a choice. They've got a specialist batter in the order and then a specialist bowler further on. But when that specialist bowler has the second best strike rate in the history of ODI cricket and the best one in World Cups, I mean, what a position to be in that is the player that you have on your bench. And, you know, getting into the knockouts, they're going to want Hardik to be back. Do you know how long the injury is? Because they kind of downplayed it. Then he didn't go on the plane. And they're not very good at talking about their injuries. It feels a little bit more serious than they're saying.
Yeah, I mean, I've been quite confused as well. They did release a press release or something that said that Hardik won't be playing the game versus New Zealand, but they didn't provide any sort of information on how serious the injury is. But Nasir Hussain in the comm box, when he did get injured, he got news from someone and he said that Hardik has an internal injury, not an external injury. And that does worry me because Hardik Pandya is a crunch player for India. And one of those days, they're going to need that batting and bowling depth, right? The specialists won't always win them games. But then again, Rohit has been attacking up top. Rohit 3.0, we've talked about him so much. We've written about him. He's been a part of so many podcasts. India getting off the flyers because of him. And that's a big part of their winning formula. Shami, like you said, literally was on the bench and second best strike rate in the world. And comes in and gets a 5-wicket haul. He did something similar versus Australia in the ODI series earlier. Shubman Gill also has his first ever World Cup's half century. So how does one beat this Indian team? Like, what does a team need to do to overcome this challenge?
Yeah, I think there aren't many ways that you can do it outside of just the obvious, right? Which is, you know, new ball wickets. So there have been a lot of wickets falling in this tournament, but most of them have gone to New Zealand and India. So someone's going to have to get wickets against them. And I thought that when New Zealand had their best chance was when they got the fourth and fifth wicket, right? Mm-hmm. And they maybe in that way, South Africa would be a team that's slightly set up better to be in that sort of situation. You get a flat pitch against Australia, though. We know Australia can make 350, 380, put you under a lot more pressure. So the best teams can still stretch them. And this is why this tournament's so ridiculous is, a bit like New Zealand in 1992, you're going to be the best team all the way through the tournament. And if you don't win one game, you go home early, right? And so there's no reason why that can't happen to India as well. But they just, to me, have so many contingencies. I thought it was really interesting that they still went hard at the top with one less bat in the team. That, to me, is the best sign I've seen from India so far, other than the fact that I already thought they were really good. But the fact that they didn't go, we don't have batting down to eight, so let's just pull it back a little bit now. And they were like, no, we're going to keep batting the same way. And that, you know, in the end, New Zealand didn't make it completely tight, but one more wicket. Definitely, I think it might have been when Jadeja and Kohli were batting at one stage. Jadeja went halfway down the crease and made a huge error there. That's a run out there then it gets really interesting. And you know, that's what other teams have to be doing, is going, okay, we need 6 wickets. Let's get 6 wickets by the 35th over by any means necessary. Then we have a chance of beating them.
Yeah, and they're definitely the team to beat and they're firm favorites to lift this World Cup. And let's just hope for Indian supporters' sake that when it comes to November 19th, we're not talking about a bad half hour of cricket or peaking at the wrong time and that sort of stuff. But India are looking really, really good. Let's go on to New Zealand as well. You know, they lost to India, but did defeat Afghanistan. Even though 5 catches were dropped, it was quite a convincing win. And look, their batters have been getting runs. Will Young got a 50 versus Afghanistan, as did Tom Latham and Glenn Phillips. And then Rachin Ravindra once again got a 50 versus India, 75, really attractive 75 at first drop. And Tarryl Mitchell scored 130 as well. But do you reckon they're lacking a bit of firepower in that batting lineup?
I mean, it's kind of how they've always been, right? If Mitchell went a bit slower in that innings, then we have seen him at times. You know, we saw him against England in one of the games before the World Cup, just completely open up, right? And he didn't do that. And it could have just been because they had the bad start. And that's a New Zealand trait. That's how they play their cricket. And that's fine. I think any team that has Mitchell, Phillips, and Chapman has the ability to score very, very quickly. But they have a lot of guys who don't want to score particularly quickly. And that is their you know, their way of going about it. I'm not sure their batting's all that much different than Pakistan's, really, other than what? Pakistan don't have Phillips, right? That's probably the main difference between the two. And so, yeah, I think from that perspective, but if they hadn't have lost the early wickets, but that's the thing. When you do lose early wickets, it is very hard to continue batting that same way when you know that, you know, you've got Santner at 8, which is not terrible, but the way that New Zealand generally play is they try and get par or just above par scores, unless everything goes their way, and then they can score massively against you. They're a good team. I can't see. I think they've been fantastic. I just cannot see how a team can win this World Cup with Rachin Ravindra as their fourth bowler. Fifth bowler. He was fourth bowler in one game, but I just cannot see how they will be able to do that. And I think, again, you saw against India, when you talk about the batting power play, sorry, the batting power, it was the bowling power of, if they had one more bowler in that lineup, it would have been completely different, right? Like, they would have been able to keep more pressure on them. And in the end, when was Ravindra bowling, like the 43rd over or something?
Something like that, yeah.
That shows you what they were trying to do is take as much wickets as they could early on with their frontline bowlers. It's just, that's not an ideal situation to be in.
Yeah, I mean, they do have a fifth bowler issue somewhat, but Mitchell Santner is the leading wicket taker off this World Cup with 12 scalps.
Absolutely.
He's been phenomenal. Yeah, and Lockie Ferguson is back in form. He's bowling thunderbolts. He's bouncing batters out left, right and center. He's got like 5 wickets in the last 2 games since we recorded an episode. And then, you know, their new bowl pair of Matt Henry and Trent Bolt. You know, Bolt was always different gravy, but Matt Henry is getting that ball to wobble, as pointed out by Ahmed in the comment section. And, you know, cleaned up Gurbaz with a peach. He's been really, really good this World Cup. And people forget that Matt Henry has played 2 World Cup finals, right?
Yeah.
Is he the most underrated seamer at this World Cup?
I don't think people understand how good he's been at striking. It's funny that unless you're a fast bowler or like a left armer, I remember when Chris Wokes was the leading power play bowler going into the last World Cup. And no one, when I wrote about it, people were just like, what? What are you talking about? No, he's not. And I was like, no, he is. He's taking his wickets. He's taken like 40 wickets in the power play at whatever it was, an average of 20 or something. And I think Matt Henry's a little bit like that. It's not quite as dramatic. He gets them in kind of conventional ways and everything else. But no, he's been fantastic. Their top four bowlers are absolutely not the issue here. I expect some regression from Santner just because he's been so good at the start of the tournament that it would be very hard for him to keep up this level of being good. But if he does, that's incredible. Lockie started terribly and is already great. Bolt hasn't taken many wickets yet. What's Bolt got? 5 or 6 wickets?
Something like that. And Rohit smacked a 6 off a knuckleball, which would dent his confidence.
Well,
right?
The other thing I would say is I reckon most of his wickets are from the knuckleball. So what happens if he... I would say what happens if he can get the ball to swing, but it doesn't seem like anyone can get it to swing in this tournament at the moment. But if he can get it to swing, that makes it more interesting. If all four of their frontline bowlers are firing, that's more of the Australian model then at that stage, isn't it? If Santner can be economical and take wickets, and he kind of has to do both because... You know, Rachin and Phillips. Well, Phillips cannot continue to take wickets the way he has, and Rachin cannot be either, right? He kind of has to make up for that. it's risky, but it's still possible.
Yeah, no, definitely. And before we go on a break, I just really need to talk to you about this.
Please.
Talk to me about Daryl Mitchell's sweat. And also the fact that Simon Strike Rate Duel, who I love, by the way, has called him out.
Hey, look, he sweats a lot. I remember still getting attacked by that guy. So I tweeted a joke going, Daryl Mitchell is sweating more in Cardiff than I've ever seen a human sweat. He's going to have fun in the World Cup in India. And this guy was going back, I think you'll find that India is not even that hot at this time of year. And I was like, well, it is compared to Cardiff. interesting enough, he sweats, but he doesn't cramp. So cramp's a really big issue in this tournament, right? I would say I've never seen a cricket tournament with as many players get cramps. It doesn't happen as much in T20 because you're probably not out there as long. But quite often people who sweat a lot also cramp a lot. And that's, I'm talking about myself there. But he is a puddle, right? Like, okay, we know he likes to bat out of his crease. I'm just saying, if he's batting in the first innings and he stands far enough down the crease and he keeps touching his helmet, could he not put a wet spot on the pitch? I'm not suggesting he should tamper with the wicket. I'm just saying, could he do it?
What if he rubs his helmet on the pitch? Because he's sweating through his helmet, right? I've seen that and it's crazy. But let's just take some of the comments before we go on break. Sumit says, hi, Behram, didn't know you were Canadian, but your gracefulness and niceties surely seem Canadian. Pakistani people are nice too, very hospitable. Come on, Sumit. And then Emma is asking a lot of questions. Emma, I'm trying to entertain all of them. But if you really want one answered, there's a super chat option. And that goes out to everybody. Your question will be taken 100% if you do send us a super chat. But that's it for New Zealand and India. We've got a bunch of other teams to talk about. So we'll come back after this break to talk about them. You're watching Uncovered with Jared and Behram. See you after this break.
This video is brought to you by Wicket Cricket Manager, the game that makes me scream at my phone.
Welcome back to episode 55 of the Uncovered podcast. You're with Behram and Jared. And Sandhya Das is in the comments saying hi. So hello to you, Sandhya. Now, let's come to South Africa. Now, they're an extremely funny team, aren't they? Who, after losing to the Netherlands, they humiliated England. And Heinrich Claassen scored 109 off 67 balls on one leg because he really was having a tough time out there. Marco Janssen at number 7 has been a revelation. Fantastic. 75 off 42. And I know CS, our colleague, will be chuffed about that. Rossi and Riza Hendricks got 50s as well. And Gerald Coetzee. Am I saying that right?
I think so, because there was a tennis player called Amanda Coetzee. So I've said it that way. And then sometimes I get freaked out and I say Coetzee because I've heard people say it that way. But I think it's Coetzee.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to call him Coetzee because it's Nokia. It's easier that way. But he's been devastating with the ball as well. He's been uprooting stumps for fun. They'll surely make it to the semifinals, right?
Oh, they'll make it to the semifinals, won't they? Mm. Are you suggesting where they finish?
I am suggesting that. Can they shit the bed from here on in the group stage?
They could certainly shit the bed from here. Here's my issue. Group stage, I don't think, I'm not saying they'll win every game, but I think they'll certainly get enough. Well, if they get in that first semifinal. So I've got a theory, and I haven't backed it up 100%, but that it is harder to chase in World Cups than it is in a normal game. And the reason being, in a normal game, you're just like, well, we'll have a go. If we don't do it, we don't do it. That's fine. And in a World Cup, it's like, oh my God, we have to chase this total. And so, you know, the tension just goes up massively. We know they're not a good chasing side. And the game that they lost, they were chasing. Odds are, I know we found out recently that coin flip is not 50-50, but, you know, if chances are in one of those games, they are going to have to bat second. That is my issue. Because I think it's much easier to bat with a shallow batting line. Even though Marco's been incredible, you can still see that they were quite nervous when they lost the 5 wickets at that 37 over mark against England. England did everything right except get that one last wicket, right? And if they'd done that, it could have been absolute carnage. I mean, England might still have collapsed for no runs because who knows? But it wouldn't have been the total that they were looking for. When you're batting second, everything changes. And it is very, very different. I think they might be almost as good as India when they bat first. I think they might be almost as good as Pakistan when they bat second.
Yeah, well, there's a word that we won't take for South Africa, which a lot of people will start using if they are not able to chase some totals.
But this is a perfect point. Let's say it happens, right? And they do fail. And that's what everyone will say. And it's like, well, wait a minute. We knew that they were struggling with chases beforehand. That isn't choking. That is literally doing what you always do. All the flaws throughout the history of South African cricket are always in their lineup, if you look at them. Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, there's another really, really fascinating thing that's happened with South Africa, of course. Temba Bavuma was ill. Reeza Hendricks came in, scored 85. Temba is South Africa's captain, who's been a part of a few memes already. You know, him with the towel, him sleeping during the captain's talk. Look, I like Temba. I do not dislike Temba. I think ODI cricket is his format. But this is a precarious situation, to say the least.
What's his ODI batting average?
It was 57-odd before the World Cup. I haven't checked it since.
I think it's 50. What's Reeza Hendricks' batting average?
Reeza Hendricks is probably averaging in the high 40s, isn't
30.
It? Isn't it so? Oh, is it?
It might 30? Be slightly higher after the innings the other day. Imagine South Africa, of all teams, dropping their captain, who's already dropped himself once in a World Cup. But imagine them dropping a captain who's averaging 50 for a guy who's averaging 30 because of one innings. Like,
but Temba's got terrible PR, hasn't he? He's got some of the worst PR, maybe worse than Adam Zampa.
Yeah. No, he does. And look, a lot of it is 30.2, Reeza Hendricks. I had to look it up to make sure I was right. No, he does. And a lot of it is racism. A lot of it is the quota system and how it worked and everything else. I think he's a natural ODI player. He hasn't been very good in this World Cup. But actually, coming into this World Cup, I thought he could be a really important player because he's incredibly fit. He's very good against playing, very good playing spin, very good at strike rotating. All the things you want for an Asian 50-over World Cup. He's an elite player. He doesn't have some of the other elite skills. Look, Reeza Hendricks is fantastic, but I don't think you can make that change from a cricket point of view, from a captaincy point of view, from a politics point of view. Like, I could go on and on and on. It would be a terrible decision. But what's great is that they have a guy like Reeza Hendricks who is available to them, who can probably bat anywhere from 1 to 4, maybe, and be fine. And we saw Will Young is another version of this. These are pretty happy about because, I don't know, Temba comes back. He was only ill, right? So he comes back, and next game, Heinrich Klaassen shatters his hamstring or something. And you have changes. They have the ability to be able to handle that, you know, as India did, you know, with Hardik. That's the position you want to be in. You don't want to be in the position like England where it's like, okay, so Reece Topley's out and we're going to pick Bryden Carr's. Is Bryden Carr's playing the next game? Is he going to change England's World Cup hopes? No. And that was the team that had incredible depth, but they don't have incredible depth in that side of their cricket, right? At the moment, you know, and Jofra's injured as well. So it is two frontline bowlers that they're missing there. And we saw with Sri Lanka, what happens when you lose two of your, you know, five best bowlers? It's not ideal.
But,
I can't see how Temba's not as long as he doesn't have the runs anymore. Well, as long as he has the right kind of runs, not the wrong kind of runs. That's a diary.
That is also very, very true.
In case anyone didn't get it, I want to make it very clear.
Yeah, well, Temba's also a terrific fielder, so he adds value over there as well. And Arco in the comments has actually asked, why isn't Janeman Malan in the SA team? So is that something to do with that quota system that you're talking about? Because I think he's a really good player, Janeman Malan.
No. So, I mean, very rarely is it to do with the quota system. It's more to do with the fact that Janeman Malan is the same as everyone else. What player in that team is he better than, right? Everyone is of such a high level. Like, I would say, the only thing I would say about Janeman is he is probably a better player than Reeza Hendricks in one-day cricket so far. He is a bit younger. But Janeman Malan averages 48, but with a strike rate of 83. So most of those guys, I can't remember what Temba's strike rate is, but I would assume it's higher. Everyone else off the top of my head would be the same or higher. And they're all absolutely, you know, have the ability to beast the ball everywhere, where Janeman probably doesn't have that as well. So Riley, you could throw Riley Rousseau in there as well. Am I missing? Is there another one?
Yeah, Riley could have been there, actually.
DeWalt Brevis.
That's a very valid point.
Right?
Baby AB. Right? Tristan Stubbs. He's really good, right?
So they've got a lot of players. But if look, people keep saying, why isn't this guy there? It's like, have you been watching? They've got the best top six in the world. That's why they don't need to make any changes. Temba Bavuma, I've said this from the start. They tried to get him to work in test cricket. I think he's not quite good enough to be a consistent test player. He's probably a fringe test player. They tried to get him in the T20 team. Man can hardly hit the ball off the square. He is born to be a one-day player, and it took them forever. And finally gets in the one-day team, and what does he do? Every one of those players is overperforming. They're all in their peak, right? They're overperforming outside of perhaps Markram, who probably just should be this good and has taken a long time to get there. But David Miller's in his career best form. Heinrich Klaassen's in his career best form. Rassi, 4 years ago, in the last World Cup, played well, but was nowhere near the player he is now. Quint de Kock looks like he's very, very good. Bavuma. Like, there's a reason those other guys aren't in the team. It's because these guys are incredible. Mm-hmm. This is the best top six between the two World Cups. Now, India didn't always play their best lineup, so maybe India can push them a little bit mm-hmm. more. But, geez, this is an incredible lineup.
Yeah, that top six plus a fit and firing Marco Jansen. If he keeps scoring runs, then South Africa have no problems as things stand. Random question from Sandhya Das for you, Jared. Have you been to Byron Bay?
I have been to Byron Bay, yes.
All right, well, there you go, Sandhya. And Kiran Hariharan is asking
Byron
me about...
Bay. A lot of hippies.
All right, then maybe I'll go someday. Yeah. Kiran
for the
Hariharan
or for the weed?
Says...
Oh, both, probably both.
Both, of course. All happy vibes. Kiran Hariharan says, Behram, what do you think Shaheen is missing in this World Cup? I think he's not 100% fit, and also he's not getting that ball to swing. We've spoken about Shaheen at the start of the episode.
But
so
it's both.
Check that out.
I think it is both. Maybe a half a yard slower and it's not swinging. One of those comes back and he'll still be really good.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm hoping things turn around for him. But Sumit asks, should Rizwan replace Babar as Pakistan's next captain? We'll deal with that later. There'll be another Uncovered podcast on that. It's not time for that yet. Anyway, let's move on to England. Of course, it's taken us a lot of time, but I'm sure there are a lot of, you know, listeners and viewers who really want us to talk about England. Now, if Pakistan defecated on their birthday cake, England defecated on their birthday cake and ate it, right?
Did England?
Does that sound fair?
Did England defecate on their legacy?
Do
you know what's funny?
Basball, not even basball. This is the white ball, reset that they went through. And, you know, they've looked absolutely toothless in this World Cup. They dropped all of their all-rounders versus South Africa, unless you count David Willey as an all-rounder. And they brought back Stokes, but got rid of Livingston and not Harry Brook. Rhys Topley, the one guy who was getting wickets for them, is out injured. And commiserations to Rhys and his dad, because Don Topley was, you know, really, really animated in the stands. And
Don Topley's always really animated. Well. Don Topley's animated in every conversation that you can ever be involved with Don Topley. And Don Topley will be involved in every conversation ever. He's a chatty, chatty man. Look, I think me and Matt Roller did a podcast recently, and I was a bit worried about their ages. So it's not that I think that they're about to fall off a cliff. I certainly didn't predict this. I would never say that I did. But I was worried about, it's a really old team, and I didn't think the young players looked as strong as the, you know, I mean, even Dawid Malan, right? He is, if you go back all the way through his career, just a really, really strong performer who probably, when he got to 28, 29, hit another level. But you look at some of these other players, you know, guys like Tom Banton, and I'm trying to think of some of the other guys that have come in, and they just don't look as well-rounded and as talented. And the bowlers is a even bigger issue. Like, Adil Rashid had to play because they didn't think Moeen Ali could bowl, and they don't have another spinner that they trust in this World Cup.
Yeah.
Mark Wood is still playing, despite the fact that he's just a different kind of bowler to Liam Plunkett and would probably be better off in a different kind of role. It looks now, I think it's probably safe to say at this stage. And Matt was saying that even though they may not win all the tournaments coming up, that it would be hard to see them not getting into the semifinals, mostly, but certainly more often than not. And it's incredible how quickly this has turned around. I think their weaknesses have been massively exposed outside of Adil Rashid bowling fairly well. Every other weakness that I ever mentioned has come to fruition, right? Now, think about that compared to Mitch Santner and Marco Jansen, who've gone completely the other way. So sometimes this happens and sometimes it goes the other way. Same with Pakistan, right? Pakistan, I'm like, I'm not sure about their spin. When I said I wasn't sure about the spin, Behram, I wasn't like, they are going to be shit. I just didn't think they would take a lot of wickets, but they've been shit, right?
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And so every weakness that England had has come to fruition. But most of all, let's be honest, and you could say this of early Australia, and you could probably say this, you know, Pakistan bowlers could be in this as well. A lot of those guys are just not in form. And if they were in form, they would carry heaps of it. Like, England could score, 40, 50 runs above par, right? Have they even threatened that at one stage? So we know that their bowling can sometimes be weak, but they make up for it by putting extra pressure on the opposition by scoring extra runs. They haven't done that once. Yeah. So their bowlers have had to just bowl normally and sometimes even attack more because they haven't had the totals that they've needed and they've looked absolutely terrible.
And by dropping their all-rounders, that also gives them less of a license to actually play the way they play. And coughs and Jason Roy. But Joe Root, he recently in an interview that I was just reading before our podcast admitted that a lack of ODI cricket might be playing a part for or has contributed to England's results. And what do you think of that? Is that an excuse? Is that like, because these guys play top level cricket and T20 cricket the year round, right?
Yeah. I think Pakistan and England have played the least amount of ODIs of the major sides who are semi-final chances. But Australia doesn't use their main players that often. So it's a bit messy when I looked into it, but I would say of the top six teams, England probably did use their top players the least coming into this World Cup. So I think there is there's definitely truth to that. They said it beforehand. They said it almost a year ago. They were playing South Africa in South Africa. And they started flagging it up then. And we've seen what England have been doing over the last couple of years is very high-risk stuff when it comes to their planning because England play too much cricket, right? England and India play too much cricket, and sometimes you have to take risks. And we saw them in the middle of a test match resting players for a World Cup. We saw them get rid of all their ODIs off their schedule because they had two T20 World Cups going up. And what they are banking on is then swinging back towards it late. So the Australian style, right? Of just being like, we're not worried about that. We're not worried about that. Oh my God, what do we do? Oh no. And I just think they thought that their team was more solid than it, and it slightly was. I have been on the record from the start that I thought what Sam Curran did in the T20 World Cup in Australia was not going to last. They've got I think they had an inkling that it might not last, which is why they had the extra bowler in the squad. They now know 100%, but it has not worked.
Yeah.
Chris Wokes just doesn't look like the Chris Wokes that they need him to be at the moment. Moeen Ali can't get through 10 overs. Leon Livingston can get through 10 overs when it's a ragging pitch, but generally that means the opposition's going to have a better spinner. So does that get... It's one of those things. Sometimes when the part-timers bowl well, you just think to yourself, well, that's the worst thing that could happen because the other team doesn't have part-timers and they're going to do even better. I just think there was a lot of weaknesses there and I think it's a combination of that. They haven't played a lot of ODI cricket. Certainly their best players. I mean, you know, Joe Root and Ben Stokes were all but retired from this format, right? And then the other thing is sometimes you just all lose form at the wrong time. There's not much you can do about that sort of that side of it. Everything else, though, they knew about coming in. I think they tried to fix some of it. They couldn't fix it because they just don't have the players available to them. And then they didn't put enough cricket into the right people's legs.
Yeah, and their bowling is looking in absolute shambles. Batting is not performing up to par at all. And in order to, you know, claw their way back into this tournament, they're going to have to outbat some teams. And I personally cannot see that happening. Anyway, in the comments, we've got Rehan Ahmed and Ritwik Gokhale who have joined us. So hello to you guys.
Rehan Ahmed.
No, not the Rehan
Ahmed. I was like, jeez.
And my man Prateek is here who calls me this guy. So hello to you, Prateek, as well. Sorry for confusing you with Prateek Jha. Love both of you guys. Anyway, moving to Bangladesh, of course, we've talked about everyone just quickly on Bangladesh. Then, you know, they've not looked good at all. You could make an argument that they've been the worst team on show or on display since we last recorded. Litton and Tanzeed got some runs, versus India. They scored some attractive 50s, particularly Tanzeed. I think he was really impressive. And then, Mushfiqur Rahim and Mahmudullah have been rolling back the years, scoring some important runs. But really, their batting isn't clicking. Their bowling is not getting enough wickets. Shakib is injured at this point. You know, we don't even know when he'll be fit. And I feel like this is a missed opportunity for the Tigers because they are a better team than this. This is arguably one of the best squads that they've assembled for a World Cup. And they've absolutely, I don't see them even challenging for, sixth at this point.
Look, the one thing I would say is that the last two games they played were against India and New Zealand. And they're 1-1 against Afghanistan and England, right? They've got Sri Lanka and the Netherlands to come up. They've got Pakistan. They could still win four games, and then we won't be saying any of this. Some of this is schedule dependent, right? The game against England, they disappointed themselves. The game against England and the game against India, they lost their top order. They got their top order back against New Zealand, and they gave themselves a chance. My worry is this more and more, and this is why England is one of the reasons England is struggling. This is looking like a tournament where you need to be able to take constant wickets, and they have a more of a defensive-minded bowling attack. And she keeps not playing, right?
Yeah.
And I do think and not that he's a massively attacking, he's another defensive bowler, but a very, very good defensive bowler and puts pressure on. And I do think that if he was playing, that might be slightly different. I'm more interested to see how they go in the next three games. I think they play... I'm trying to think who they play next.
South Africa, Pakistan, and one more team.
Yes, South Africa, Netherlands, Pakistan. So they should be aiming for two wins in the next three games, right?
I think they might even get them if Pakistan continues to play the way they're playing. And South Africa, Bangladesh is always an interesting contest, right? Bangladesh have defeated them in World Cups before. I can think of two different instances back in 2007, which was quite big. And then recently in 2019 as well. And Arko has once again brought up something really interesting. He said that the pitches that Bangladesh play in, they don't allow their players to grow. It kind of stunts their growth. So do you think there's truth to that sentiment?
I've made that video before. I think it's a huge part of I think they need to change their pitches at home as much as possible in the way that New Zealand did to start improving their cricket. So yeah, I think that's a big part. But yeah, I do like South Africa and Bangladesh as a matchup. I think, you know, if Bangladesh can make 280 get South Africa in. It's actually, if South Africa win, it's a really important game for them. And if they lose, it's a really important game for them. Either way, I would almost be tempted if I was South Africa. So what have they got? Three wins or four wins at this stage? Three wins.
Three out of four, yeah.
I would be tempted for the rest of the tournament to bat second, right? Until you get to the finals and just say to them, we can't get to the finals just playing to our strengths and then get to the finals. And the first time we get there, we get a bad toss. Let us bat second every single time and prove to ourselves that it's not an issue. If it is an issue, then at least they can try and work through it on the way there. And Bangladesh is a really good team to do that against. Send them in, you know, hopefully you bowl them out for 12 and you don't have to worry about it. But if they do make 260 or 320 or, you know, something in between there, get your players out there, see how you go.
Yeah, don't lose hope just yet, Bangladesh fans. And Ahmed Hussain Chishti has once again asked that Mahmudullah is batting too low in the order. Well, Mehdi Hasan is batting up the order. You know, you've got to fit those guys in somewhere. But one last thing that I want to ask you, Jared, and we'll end this Uncovered podcast on this note. If you had to rate on a scale of 1 to 10, Richard Kettleborough's umpiring, what would you give him?
Oh, I haven't really thought much about it. is it bad? Is it good? Where are you feeling? Oh, no. It hasn't entered my consciousness.
I mean, he's not Joel Wilson. I think Joel Wilson is the modern day Billy Doctorow. That's how bad he is. And David Warner would probably have a lot more to say than I do. But I just don't think that was... That was a wide in my books. I'm not sure what you think about it.
Do you? Oh, okay. That one. I don't mind that because if a batter runs across his stumps, like if Virat was in his normal position and hits his pad, and I don't mind that. I mean, I've never thought of Kettleborough as an elite. They're all elite umpires, but I've never thought of him as that top tier umpire. And I've never thought of him as that Joel Wilson, Rod Tucker umpire, where I'm just like, how did you end up on this panel? I've always thought of him as fine, but yeah, he's not in the upper echelon who's the tall guy, Michael Goff, and the Indian guy never makes a mistake, or Maria Erasmus.
Maria Erasmus is good.
You know, I have those guys well above Kettleborough, but I've never thought of him as terrible. And that wide call, look, I was okay with it from a technical point of view. But the fact that Virat Kohli danced around a ball on his pads to get a, you know, the whole thing was just weird. That whole end was weird. But we've talked about that before. But let us finish this podcast so we can actually do another podcast. So I can do my third podcast tonight.
Yeah, we have to go record Footmarks today as well, which will be out on Wednesday. But thank you to everyone who joined us from the comments. And, you know, it's always a pleasure to have you guys. Thank you for supporting our channel. Continue to do so. Subscribe to both of Jared's channels so that you can get all sorts of content. And yeah, do tune in again next week for this episode. That'll be it. You were with Behram and Jared. That's it for the Uncovered podcast. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are many other extras as well, including a Discord channel. There's a link to those in the show notes. Please review, subscribe, and tell all your friends about our show. Word of mouth is the best way of making our podcast grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bharat Sundaresan and Behram Kazi. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston. Each episode is produced by Ishit Kuberka at Sound Potion Studio. The team from 42 help us out with the video side. Orajoti Sainapayi and Maida Akam, both producing podcasts while Mukunda Bandreddy is the head of our YouTube content.
Tired of editing your podcasts and videos because you are as lazy as me? Well, try using Memento FM, an AI-based service that cuts and dices, so all you have to do is hit post. Try Memento FM today.